So actually, I thought of doing a little change in today's schedule because I am at Kalalgoda and thought of doing the Dhamma sermon first and then conduct the question and answer session and then conduct the guided sitting so that after giving the instructions for guided sitting, then I will leave and you can continue the session for another 15, 20 minutes and wind up the session. So let me do in that sense, that way. So today actually we are continuing with the Dhamma sermon on Puragga Sutta. And as you know, Puragga Sutta is available in the Sutta Nipata, which is one of the ancient texts available in Khuddaka Nikaya and very interesting text where very interesting sermons or very interesting suttas that we all are familiar with are available. Say Mangala Sutta, Ratana Sutta. All these interesting and familiar suttas are available in this Sutta Nipata, and the Serpent Sutta or the Uraga Sutta is the very first sermon available in this Sutta Nipata. Now, important phrase that again and again that we encounter in this sutta is the last two sentences. So bhikkhu jahati oraparam urago jinnamiva tacham purana. So like a serpent sheds off its worn out skin, let the monk, let the bhikkhu gives up here and the other shore and go beyond. So here is very much like the human realm and whatever the existing situations, and the beyond is very much there is very much like something else that we are wish for. When both sides are abandoned and have the mind unestablished, giving up everything, relinquishing everything, so that letting go is encouraged. So the whole sutta encourages this again and again, letting go of various defilements, various wrong qualities or bad qualities available in ourselves. So that is the phrase repeated in each and every verse. Now we have come to the fourth verse, and it is going like this. Yo mana mudabbadi asesam. Nalasetunga sudubbalang mahogo. So bhikkhu jahati oraparam urago jinnamiva tacham purana. Yo mana mudabbadhi asesam. So mana, that you know the conceit. Mana is the conceit, the Pali term for conceit. And entirely swept up, now completely eradicated. One who has entirely removed, swept up conceit, like how? Without any remainder. And a simile is given, like a great flood removes a fragile bridge. Nalasetum. Setu is the bridge, Pali term for a bridge. And like a huge flood simply takes away this weak kind of a bridge, one may abandon the mana conceit available in one's mind. Another simile is given. So bhikkhu jahati oraparam urago jinnamiva tacham purana. Now one may remove this show and the other show, let go of this show and the other show, like a serpent shedding off its worn out skin. Now again and again this similes. Now in this verse there are two similes. One simile is the frequent one, that the like a serpent shedding out its worn out skin. That is the one simile. The other simile is how a great flood removes or destroys a very weak bridge when it is flowing. So actually these similes are very interesting and quite familiar, and again quite familiar to the nature. And Buddha is taking these similes to transmit his message. And here today's verse actually emphasizes on abandoning conceit. So If we consider the meaning and the origin of this verse, at what time and in a given time, one of the monk were living in a bank of the Ganges. He is maintaining a kind of a kuti, and one day he saw during the flood time, there's a bridge being completely carried away by this flood, and he found it is kind of inspiring. It's a kind of a food for his own awakening, and he understood, so these conditioned things are impermanent. So this flood has completely swept away this particular bridge. So when his mind has inclined towards this impermanent nature, and he has taken the sign of this bridge, the destruction or the carrying away of this bridge as a kind of an impermanence, showing the fragile nature of everything. So at that moment, Buddha understood that this monk's mind is now inclined towards vipassana. Now he spoke this verse. Yomana mudabbadhi asesam nalasetum sudubbalam mahogu so bhikkhu jahati yoraparam purago jinnamiva tachampuram. Now, main thing highlights here is the conceit. You know, among 10 fetters, conceit is coming under the higher fetters. So even one is becoming sotapanna, still conceit is available. Even when one becomes a sakadagami, still conceit is available. Even when one becomes an anagami, non-returner, still conceit is available. And only when one becomes an arahan, fully enlightened being, that one is able to abandon conceit. So therefore, conceit is something available throughout ourselves, and to, I mean, either to the higher level, to the higher degree, or to a lower level. So anyway, conceit is something that we have to take care of, because there are many reasons for the conceit to happen, and again, there are many forms of conceit. So it is typically threefold, either thinking, say yourself is you are comparing with another person, and you feel that you are superior to him or her, and you feel that you are equal to him or her. Or on the other hand, one may think, I am inferior to him or her. So this kind of comparison is sometimes ongoing. So always we are comparing ourselves. It is not only towards the physical realm or the typical mundane way of living. And even in the spiritual life, sometimes people comparing themselves. Now, if you consider the typical mundane life, so people compare themselves whether I am better than him, I am richer than the other person, I am wealthier than the other person, I am, say, confident than the other person, I am prettier than the other person, I am stronger than the other person, I am wiser than the other person, I am intelligent than the other person. So likewise, we continuously compare ourselves with another person. So actually, this very comparison brings us a lot of unsatisfaction, brings us a lot of unsafety. Because as an individual, whenever we are thinking, some form of say unsatisfactoriness, little amount of frustration going to arise, because we can't find ourselves perfect. Because as a personality, you can't be a perfect person. We are trying to be a perfect person, but we can never achieve it, because a personality is an imperfect mind-made conditioned phenomenon. It's a mind-made thing, personality. So how to make a conditioned phenomena to a perfect thing is impossible. So whenever, therefore, we feel as a person, as a personality, so that indicates some amount of unsatisfactoriness, brings us some kind of a burden, brings us some kind of unsatisfactoriness, maybe a little worry, what's going to happen next, am I safe, am I going to bankrupt, why am I going to progress. So likewise, this I-making and conceit are fairly interwoven. Ahankara, mamankara, mananuseya. So when I prepare a self here, then I am able to compare this self, myself, with another person. So the comparison happened. The mana can happen. So mana, conceit, comparison, always present, and ultimately I am going through various troubles and I am arguing with another person. I feel that other person has done something wrong, he is wrong, I am correct. So I have to blame him, I have to surrender him, I have to correct him. So likewise, many thoughts are now going on. Ultimately, we get entangled. Ultimately, we become a person and ultimately we suffer. So this conceit in that sense is fairly a subtle aspect available in our mind and available from the childhood. Now say for example, when you are in the early childhood, say another child is running faster. Now you are comparing yourself and you too want to run faster. And he is writing letters beautifully and you too want to write letters beautifully. And he is becoming the first in the class and you too want to become the first in the class. He is singing beautifully. You too want to sing beautifully. Actually, when we are associating others, so automatically this comparison happens and we too want to achieve the same thing, and we think sometimes, if he can do, why not me? I also can do the same thing. So in that sense, actually mana has a kind of a motivation. Actually, as an individual for our own success, so this mana has a kind of a contribution. So that is also accepted. So in the beautiful sutta called Bhikkhuni Sutta, in the Bhikkhuni Sangyutta, Venerable Ananda mentioned to one nun, Manang Nissaya Manang Pahatabhu. By means of conceit, you got to remove, abandon conceit. It looks doesn't really possible, but that is how it happens. Because of conceit, one can even eliminate conceit. So for example, if you consider the spiritual life, say you are going to a retreat and you are listening to others' reports, and someone is telling that I am capable of concentrating my mind, I am capable of attaining a jhana, I can clearly see various phenomena, I can clearly see various feelings, I can clearly see various thoughts, I can maintain myself in emptiness. So whenever someone is talking like this, so we also get motivated and we also feel, we also think, if he can do, why can't I do it? So this kind of a motivation is possible, and that is also required, because at the beginning, you can't go to very higher levels of understanding because you don't have such understanding. You are still in the with the defilements, with the hindrances. So at that level, actually, you need to have some kind of a motivation as a person, as a personality. So at that level, using conceit is typically accepted. So you are also now trying hard, striving, working hard to achieve the same kind of success. So that is acceptable. So that is available even in the morality. Say you want to become a moral person, a virtuous person, and you feel happy when compared with your previous life or previous state. Now you are quite confident. Okay, now I am doing well. So even in the moral life, so we can have that kind of a conceit. And sometimes, say you are developing concentration. So there again, you can maintain kind of a motivation coming through the comparison. If my friend is having this much of concentration, why can't I have that concentration? So this helps to develop concentration in yourself as well. But interestingly, when we are reaching the vipassana practice, so that is where you are starting to work against conceit, and you understand how this conceit is sort of defiled, make the mind defiled, make the mind impure, because you are able to assume that you are able to maintain a purified mind, an empty mind, unattached mind, So when you do any sort of a comparison with yourself and another person, so this purity is lost even for a short time, and there's a little bit of frustration can arise, kind of burden can arise. So at the vipassana level only, you may understand that you need to abandon this conceit even. So eye making, mind making, and the conceit also has to be abandoned. Not only raga dosa, but even these subtle levels of eye making, mind making, representing yourself as a person and comparing yourself with another person, even that has to be abandoned. Because whenever you do comparison, eye making has happened. You manifest as a person. And when there is a person, there are certain imperfections. You are not a perfect person. You are not perfectly wise. You are not a perfectly, say, generous. There are still some things to correct. So you feel a little unsafe. You feel a little frustrated. You feel a little unhappy. So this comparison, therefore, leads to a lot of unsatisfactoriness. And on the other hand, Buddha mentioned, sometimes even in the spiritual life, you are creating a person, and not only that, you are going to the level of atimana, even looking down another person. So that is actually something that we need to avoid. Say you are maintaining good virtues, good morality, good sila, and now you see another person not maintaining good sila. And therefore you do the comparison and you can probably look down that person. So that is where you are going wrong. So sila as a tool you are using to look down another person. So that is not accepted. Then Buddha mentioned, you are kind of an asappurisa. You are not a good person because you are using your own morality, own virtues to look down another person, to condemn another person. On the other hand, say you are practicing certain what you call this ascetic practices. You know, in the monk's life, what you call dutanga are available. And if you are practicing such kind of ascetic practice, and if another one is not practicing it, and using this dutanga practice, you can get a lot of conceit. I am the one going on village pindapath. The others are not going village pindapath. So I am the one using just the 3 robes. The others are having a lot of extra robes. I am the one only using the, say, ball. The others are not using the ball. So whatever, I mean, different kinds of ways that you can compare your these kind of ascetic practices in order to look down another person. So this is something not acceptable. And assume that you are developing a fair amount of concentration. And when we develop concentration, assume that now we have the first jhana. But others are still struggling. They don't have the first jhana. And you probably can have kind of a proudness because of the jhana that you are already enjoying. And you can look down another person. I am the one with first jhana. The other one doesn't have first jhana. So I am better than him. I am much better, much gifted than him. I am more fortunate. I am more with a lot of parami than another person. So likewise, you can get conceited. So this is not acceptable. And even in the other practices, say you are coming to the vipassana, on to some extent, there is a possibility of arising conceit in vipassana also. Say you are having some understanding about impermanence, but another person doesn't have that understanding. So probably you can have some amount of conceit because of this understanding. But anyway, as the understanding is really growing, if the proper wisdom is really arising, then you are get on to the level of non-self. There you understand there is no person here. There is no personality here. So then slowly, whenever conceit arises, so you can be aware of it. You can't immediately uproot it. You can't immediately remove it. But at least when it arises, you know that conceit has arisen. I have to abandon it. Rather than become a victim of that conceit, you can abandon it without promoting it. So So likewise, Buddha mentioned, so this conceit is something available throughout our spiritual life till we become an arahant. So there's another interesting verse I come across in Itivuttaka Pali, that is again in the Kuddaka Nikaya. Yena manena mattase satta gacchanti duggatin tang manang sammadanyaya pajahanti vipassino pahaya na punayanti punayanti imang lokang udachananti. Beings puffed up with conceit, that means say build up with conceit, go to rebirth in a bad born, in a bad realm. But having rightly understood conceit, those with insight abandon it. So the vipassana yogis, when you are more and more understanding the transient nature of everything, imperfect nature of everything, non-self nature of everything, whenever a comparison happens, you as a person, you as a man, you as a woman, you as a person, you as a better person, you as a stronger person, you as a wise person, and you are comparing yourself with another person. So this kind of a comparison, if we are fairly wise, we have to be avoided. So this is not easy, by the way, because this comparison always happens. Whenever you are talking with your friend, the comparison can automatically happen. Say whenever you are giving a lecture, you are delivering a sermon, still the comparison can happen. Say you are associating few others, the comparison can happen. And again, you manifesting as a person can happen. And again, sometimes this manifestation as a person is also required. Say you are doing a kind of an administrative job. So you have to play that role. You have to be the administrator at that time. Otherwise, the other people may not listen to you. So you have to have some sort of a personality that is accepted. But knowing that this is simply a role, this is necessary because of the job or the duty. So that is important. So after you are done with the duty, then you, if you can again become humble, down to earth, so that is much better rather than being conceited constantly. So sometimes certain designations make us really conceited. Say you are a doctor. So all the time people are coming and asking your help. So that can lead to a little bit of conceit in yourself, because you are in a better position and others are always coming and asking your assistance. So a fair amount of conceit can arise in your mind if you are not properly handling it. So ultimately this conceit become lasting in your mind, and even once you come home, you are not a mother, you are not a father, you are not a husband, you are not a wife, but you are a doctor, well respected doctor. You are maintaining that kind of a mindset, kind of a uplifted or a conceited mindset. That is harmful, and that is sometimes happen. Say you are a teacher and all the others are respecting you, all the others are venerating you, and they are offering you various things, and then you can become fairly conceited. Actually, this can happen to monks. So because when their elders are, say elders, since they, the say the mother, father, they are still lay people, they come and venerate you, respect you, and they offer food and clothes and etc., and they pay respect. And then the monk can become fairly conceited if he is not properly handling it. So likewise, our life situations, various social status, has a fair amount of chance to generate kind of a conceit. And even in the monkhood, the young monks have to respect the elder monks. And the lay people are respecting the elder monks. And he is, in that sense, has a fair chance of making a self, become more conceited. So if we are not really understanding this situation, if we are not properly handling it, if we are not wisely knowing how this eye-making, mind-making can happen, conceit can happen, then we'll be in a troubled situation that we are manifesting as an individual. And sometimes Buddha mentioned as asavatthaniya dhamma. say, rather than now you are eliminating fetters, asavas, now you are promoting fetters. Because of the long standing in the monkhood, so you are becoming more and more respectable. As a result of that, you become conceited. More and more, students you have, you get a lot of prestige, respect again, and then you can become conceited. More and more the learning you have, it can make you conceited. Say you have a degree, a double degree, a double PhD, whatever it is. Now you can become more conceited because others don't have it. And you feel that you are better than the others, you are more supreme than the others. So that kind of a conceit can arise. And interestingly, even when your children are doing well, so you as a mother, you as a father, when your children are doing well, probably you can be conceited. My son is the one who passed the exam. My son is the one who won the, in the sports meet. So likewise, your children's achievement can make you fairly conceited. That is also possible. So likewise, you can see there are many events, many possibilities available for us to get conceited. So that is why it is very difficult to abandon, because it is closely related, closely interwoven. To understand how eye making happens, how mind making happens, how conceit happens, how comparison automatically happens, as a result of that, how a person builds up. So these are very subtle aspects that we need to recognize happening in our mind. So that is why conceit as a higher fetter, Buddham Bhagya Sanyojana, that Buddha mentioned, only possible to abandon as an arahant. But it doesn't mean that till we become arahant that we have to maintain conceit. Rather, when we clearly know that the amount of conceit is there and it is going to look down another person, so at that time actually we have to apply wisdom. Rather than being a victim of conceit, we better become humble. So therefore Buddha mentioned, Suvacho chassa mudu anatimani. So you become kind of tameable. You are ready to listen to others. Mudu, you are become more soft. Anatimani, you become more humble. You are not conceited. So these are kind of skills, good qualities that Buddha highlight that we need to develop. So when conceit is there, actually you are not ready to accept someone else's advice. Because you think that you are the best and you are the supreme and the others are there to listen and who are they to advise me. So this is the kind of attitude that we have on that sense. Therefore, even when someone is advising, they are not ready to accept. This is really harmful. Because sometimes it is very rarely that we encounter good people. Even they are advising us if we are conceited, and we may ignore their advices. And till the whole life we are keeping whatever the shortcoming that we were maintaining because we didn't accept the other person's advice. Because we are so conceited. So in order for us to accept someone else's advice, we have to be humble. We have to be down to earth. Therefore, conceit plays a kind of a critical role. Either we are progressing in this path, so are we using even the spiritual path to make a person, to develop conceit. So these are something that we need to consider. Therefore, we have to be careful of conceit and not to become a victim of conceit, but to be more humble and ready to listen to others. And if there are mistakes in ourselves, to correct our mistakes, then only it is possible to have the proper growth in the spiritual life. So with that, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon based on the Uraka Sutta. Now I like to open the session for questions. I can't hear you, Chamila. Can you talk a little louder? Yeah.
Dhyani will be reading the questions today.
Okay.
Terwan Sarnai Bante.
Yeah.
We have 7 questions.
Okay.
I'll start. Dear Venerable Sir, this is regarding my sitting mindfulness practice. When I start, I use the technique you have taught to scan the body a bit and make sure that I'm aware of the body sensations to confirm that I am in the present moment. Afterwards, I try to observe the various sensations in the upper body, and most of the time I can grasp the breath. Then I observe the breath and get to know the difference between the in-breath and the out-breath, and many sensations around the nostrils where I keep my focus on. After 10 to 15 minutes of continuous application of this technique, the breath starts to become subtle and fade away. Once the breath fades away, and when I'm in a relaxed state, the awareness slowly comes into my sitting posture. The awareness comes inside the body deeper and deeper and concentrates around the sensations of my sitting posture, mainly the pressure on my back from the floor. If the body sensations come to the forefront, should I now focus on the body posture with metta?
Can you repeat the last sentence?
If the body sensations comes to the forefront, should I focus on the body posture?
Oh, not necessary. Actually, when we are maintaining the posture, these refinements happen. So the just maintaining the posture and again bringing your attention back to the sitting posture is the one level of understanding and one way of doing it. And later when we are maintaining our attention throughout the body, now the refinement happens and you can now recognize subtle sensations. Say while sitting, as you have mentioned, closer to the back, closer to the buttocks, there are certain pressure points. And maybe the sensations are available, the movements are happening, vibrations are happening. So these are more interesting and needs your refined observation, close observation. So therefore, when sensations are available, try to observe them. So observe them closely and see how they are behaving and try to learn from them and try to develop some understanding through them, through this observation, and that is more appropriate. And I mean, time to time, actually, you can even switch to the overall posture as well. And you can use both. Actually, sometimes if you feel little tired, then you can relax, step back, and just maintain your attention on the posture. But on the other hand, in order to develop a fair amount of wisdom, you need to investigate phenomena. So the investigation can happen through these various sensations arising. Yeah.
Dear Bhante, since mindfulness is experience first practice, what is the basis of understanding the Four Noble Truths without contemplating? I'll repeat the question, Bhante.
Yeah.
Dear Bhante, since mindfulness is an experience first practice, I think what they're trying to say is it's an experience based practice. What is the basis of understanding the Four Noble Truths without contemplating?
Yeah, actually, now if you consider the mindfulness practice, the Satipatthana Sutta, Four Noble Truths are included in the Dhammanupassana, the Satchapabba. So as we are moving forward, so you get a fair understanding about the body, fair understanding about various feelings, a fair understanding about the mind itself. So when you reach the Four Noble Truths, so you are basically, you have to understand about the suffering, the dukkha. Actually, the body itself is dukkha, the feelings themselves are dukkha, and then all the different kinds of mental states, thoughts, etc. are also coming under the dukkha. So the dukkha satcha is a broader thing which includes all these five aggregates. Actually, the five aggregates are the ones we are trying to examine through the vipassana process or in the satipatthana practice. And when you are reaching the dhammanupassana, so it is being highlighted. So far, I mean, we didn't actually, even it is included, sometimes we don't know that that is what we are doing. I mean, we don't know that we are trying to understand the dukkha satcha, because Buddha mentioned in the, to the understanding of the dukkha satcha, dukkham parinyaya, that you need to properly understand the dukkha satcha. You need to properly, thoroughly, you have to understand the suffering, the dukkha. So, what is dukkha? So, Buddha mentioned panchupadana khanda, that is the dukkha. Panchupadana skanda niya vachaniya. This dukkha is a synonym for the five clinging aggregates. So, more you are operating on the rupa, kayanupassana, vedana, feelings, and chittanupassana, the mind. So, this is where we are trying to more and more understand about the suffering, the dukkha. So therefore, we are operating on the Four Noble Truths. And more we understand, we are able to let go of the desire, the craving, that is the second noble truth. And as we are able to abandon the desires, now we are able to rest on the peacefulness or rest on the disenchantment or kind of non-attachment, non-grasping state of mind. So that is the third noble truth. And now we need to cultivate the whole path again and again, so that we are able to maintain that for a long time. And that is the fourth noble truth which has to cultivate. So therefore, when we reach Dhammanupassana, then you get a fair understanding what we were actually doing. But at the beginning, we didn't know exactly all this information, why we are doing it, what is the real map of the journey, we don't know. But later, when you are more and more familiar with the whole thing, ultimately, when you reach Dhammanupassana, you have a better understanding of the Four Noble Truths. Yeah.
So, next question, 4 of 7. Dear Venerable Bhante, when I finish walking practice, I then started the sitting session. And today, after that, I had lunch. Then, I tried to be mindful as much as possible while having lunch. Because I was hungry, after the meal, I was feeling much better. After this, I was walking outside, looking at the beautiful sky. Meanwhile, when mind is in peace, some old thoughts came. These were coming in like picture pieces and had some explanations to why those people shown in the thoughts within the brackets behaving that way. There was a sense of why are people so cruel to innocent people? But then again, instead of a strong anger, it was more of a oh dear. I was not feeling a strong anger, but I was also feeling not accepting the behaviors. The judgments come in automatically when I watch until the end of the whole thing finished in the mind. Perhaps I'm not explaining this very clearly, but what I'm trying to say is we have an automatic judgment process based on the cultural and values being fed to us, such as do not harm others, etc. This is useful as it helps to protect ourselves and others. Yet, when past thoughts are released, it is hard to keep the mind away from judging them. I try to tell myself, use this to feel not excited about the samsara and use it to nibbida rather than asking, wishing, fantasizing and thinking that there is a flat earth with metta.
Yeah, as you said, I mean, we can't find a flat earth. So as you said, I mean, things are always like this. I mean, it is not only this time. But even during the Buddha's time, there were battles, there were arguments, there were quarrels, and there were sort of misjudgments, and many things are there. So this is the way of the human realm. This is the way of the sensual realm. I mean, we can't find the perfection in this human realm. So if we are trying to find the perfection in the human realm, so that is where That is where we have gone wrong. Because in the imperfect world, we are trying to have a perfection. In the conditioned world, we are trying to find something unconditioned. So instead of doing that, so, I mean, when we accept, okay, this is the imperfect world, these things are changing, things are vulnerable, these are impermanent. And then it's very, very much of accepting and having some sort of empathy, and we can maintain kind of a steady mind even when things go wrong. It doesn't mean that we become sort of zombies kind of thing. Rather, we are sensitive, but we know this is the situation. This is how they are. This is the way it is. Some deeper understanding helping us to cope the situation. So as probably you may be referring the situation happening in Sri Lanka, so various political issues and the arguments and the quarrels, protests, etc., etc. So sometimes it is disturbing, true, but this is how it is, the whole sensual world. It is not unique to Sri Lanka, I mean, even to other countries, the same thing. Time to time, different countries go through these kinds of situations, and this is because of the, say, defilements in ourselves. So, I mean, because of the human ignorance. I mean, so whenever we are operating based on our ignorance, so then, of course, arguments are there, quarrels are there, battles are there, wars are there, always we are going to trouble. Anyway, we can't make the whole world flat, as you mentioned properly. Instead, let's have kind of a stability in ourselves, wisdom in ourselves, to cope up with the situation, to have some patience, even if we collapse, to get up quickly, to have some resilience. That is something that Buddha highlights, and that is what he emphasized even in the Dhamma, in the Mangala Sutta. Uttasa loka dhammehi chittam yassana kampati asokam virajam khema etam mangala muttama. So when we go through ups and downs of this life, not to get shocked, not to get wavered because of these ups and downs, but to maintain a stability in the mind is a kind of a blessing. And not worrying, asokam virajam, not polluting our mind, not getting defiled, and khemang, and feel safe. It's kind of a blessing. So these are interesting qualities that Buddha highlights. So as we move towards the progress, I mean, probably we can achieve at least to some extent of these qualities. Yeah.
Next question, 5 of 7. Dear Venerable Bante, there are interpretations about the relaxed modes or silent modes of mind we achieve in practice as arupa vachara jhana. Can these be formless jhanic states, and our practice is leading to such things?
Yes. I mean, if you refer Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta, so Buddha clearly mentioned Upekkha ekatta ekatta sita. So there's a kind of equanimity which is actually showing this state, Salayatana Vibhanga flowchart diagram. Give me a minute, I'll try to show something. Now, let me share with you something regarding the Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta. So here one is coming through Vipassana practice, and he does insight practice based on matter, and with that certain amount of joy can arise, certain amount of grief can arise, certain amount of equanimity can arise. So then Buddha asked to abandon grief by means of joy. And then the joy and the equanimity is available, and then to give up joy by means of equanimity. And the equanimity available is twofold. That is equanimity based on diversity and equanimity based on unity. And then Buddha asked to abandon equanimity based on diversity by means of equanimity based on unity. And here, equanimity based on unity, upekkha ekatta ekatta sita. Yes, this is very much the arupa jhana. But we came through vipassana practice. We came through vipassana practice. Ultimately, we have come in line with the arupa jhana. So therefore, when you are experiencing unattached emptiness in your mind, it is very similar to the arupa jhana. An interesting point is that the mind is not even associating kind of jhanic state. Mind has its own freedom, independence, and it's fairly closer to the arupa jhana, but there is no even attachment. So you are not trying to attach to a particular jhanic level, but rather you are using this level, this sort of clarity of mind, emptiness, to recognize more and more subtle defilements and to abandon them. So that is where Buddha highlights in the atammayata, non-identification in the as the last resort. So therefore, in this Sallayatana Vibhanga Sutta, so fair amount of resemblance is given with the arupa jhana, and the vipassana achievements happen at the latter stages. Yeah.
Next question. Dear Bhante, I heard that during the time of Buddha Ghosha, when he wrote the Atua, there was a pile of books collected from the locals and was burned. How was this possible? It definitely cannot be the time of King Duttagamana, as he will never allow this to happen. This would have happened after, but still, burning a lot of religious books seems to be very shocking. This is rather a statement than a question. Appreciate your time on this program with Metta.
Yeah. This is something has happened in the Sasana. We are actually, because in Sri Lanka, you know, there are different kinds of dialects, and maybe certain regions, they are using their own slight variations of the language, and they started to write their own books regarding the Dhamma. And ultimately, there seems to be certain discrepancies. And then the monks found, okay, rather than having these discrepancies, if we have more and more discrepancies, then there could be certain confusion in the future. So let's take everything to the one language. So they selected the Magadhi language, that is the Pali language. Therefore, Venerable Buddha Ghosha was invited to write, examine everything and put everything into the Pali language and come up with the standardized text. That is what they have done. So in order to standardize, so they have burned all the other things. But on the other hand, this is a kind of, as you mentioned, this is something went wrong in a way, because Buddha wants to have kind of a flexible approach towards the languages. So for example, when certain monks want to convert the whole teaching into Sanskrit, Buddha didn't recommend. Rather, Buddha mentioned you all better use the local languages. If you are teaching in Sinhala, if you are teaching in English, you are using the Magadhi, you are using, say, different languages. Buddha acknowledges that. Buddha says it's no problem, because it is not the language which matters, but the understanding is beyond the language. So language is just a mechanism, a tool that one is using to pass the message. Therefore, Buddha didn't give much emphasis to the language. Rather, he encouraged have this free way of thinking. But unfortunately, so during this particular period, as you mentioned, so they want to standardize everything. As a result of that, they burned all the other languages or all the other texts, and they standardize everything to Pali language. So it is true, it has happened, but now we can't revert it back. Yeah.
Next question. This is regarding the Dhamma sermon. Dear Venerable Bhante, how do you remove the conceit with Metta?
Yeah, so that is something interesting. To Venerable Rahula, Buddha mentioned, Animittancha bhavehi mananusaya mujjaha. This is available in the Rahula Sutta. in Suttanipata, so in the long run probably we can discuss this sutta as well. Animittancha bhavehi mananusaya mujjaha. So you got to maintain fair amount of signless state of mind, animitta level. That means your mind is fairly clean, fairly clear. It is not corrupted with various signs. So whenever slight comparison happens in the mind, whenever slight conceit happens in the mind, so now you can recognize. Because you know you were maintaining some kind of a clarity, you were maintaining some sort of a purity, but now that purity is lost because certain amount of conceit is arising. So at that time, rather than become a victim of this conceit, advice is to abandon conceit, to understand conceit, not to be driven by conceit. So basically, so these mental states, more pure mental states, can be used as a reference to eliminate the conceit. So, and again, when eye making happens, when assume that you did something good, and again your mind is now trying to make a self, you do some sort of a self-appropriation, then you need to abandon that. You need to recognize it and then abandon that, not to promote it. So rather than making a person, now you understand how mind is trying to delude you by making a person, and now you are abandoning that. So this is how we have to slowly abandon conceit, eye making, mind making, etc.
Dear Venerable Bhante, while walking on the path, it seems the challenges are coming along the way, and I sense that these seems to be the past karma vipaka. My question, Bhante, is that should this not be dealt at all from the worldly perspective? I know from internally we need to be happy that karma is paying off. However, by taking precautions, does this create more karma? To be precise, I will give you some examples. I feel I have been running throughout my entire life from people. When I was 19 years old, back in Sri Lanka, some of the relatives did a planned approach to keep me locked in their family, thinking that they can use me to serve Upasthana them when they are old. I escaped them. However, that was the first time in my life which I had to tell a lie, break the Musavada Silpada, but that was to save myself and not to harm one and run away from those people. Yet things seems to be coming in various other ways. These days a person is stalking my home in a car, and although I have fixed the security cameras. But where is the end? Maybe there is no end, other than making myself like a river so that even a tiny salt spice particle fell into it, get salty, spicy. I am feeling quite a uselessness in working, earning, living, and I'm getting to the realization of letting go of my identity of who I am would release me from the suffering, from this suffering. I'm feeling quite a kalakirima about everything. Much appreciate your service with metta. That's the question.
Yeah. Actually, as you mentioned, I mean, sometimes, so certain difficult life situations are there. We have to cope up with these situations. And as previously we discussed with another yogi, and he or she has properly pointed out, we can't make the whole world flat, and we ourselves have to develop a fair amount of, say, resilience, a fair amount of courage, and kind of, say, bearance or tolerance in ourselves. So that those are the ones I feel in the long run could be more useful, and because we can't expect others to behave perfectly. And that is impossible. So even when they are behaving like this, if we can maintain kind of a steady mind, that is something really a blessing. So it could be due to karma, but we can't exactly say, I mean, we can't exactly say it is happening due to a past karma. it can or cannot. But you can find, I mean, it doesn't mean that we are not finding any solution, rather we are going through all the suffering and very much like a helpless. That is also not the approach that we need to take. But if there is a kind of a solution which we can take, you are welcome, you can take that solution. But expecting complete satisfaction or expecting complete peace from the outside is very much not possible. Because as you said, as someone else said, so the world is the world. So you can't make the whole world perfect. Even to the Buddha, many things have happened. And even there are many instances that some are trying to kill the Buddha. And there are many, many instances that many people are blamed, people have blamed the Buddha. So likewise, even the Buddha has subjected to these kinds of vicissitudes of the life. So how about us? So it's definitely, we may have to go through it. And when we are going through it, how about understanding, okay, I am still getting shocked by these things. I'm still getting wavered by these things. Let me further develop so that I'm not being shocked by these. Let me further develop so that I'm not getting shocked by these, not wavered by these. So this you can use as a kind of a motivation. Actually, Bhante Dhammajiva used to say, now suppose you are developing mindfulness and when you are meditating, suppose even a slight sound, say sometimes breaks your concentration, your mindfulness, then you can understand, okay, even this slight sound has really disturbed me. So let me further develop so that these slight sounds are not disturbing me. So you are using this weakness as a way of progressing yourself. Now suppose now you have further developed your mindfulness and another day the same sound can happen, but now you are not disturbed. You are ready to maintain your stability. You are ready to develop your mindfulness, maintain your mindfulness without getting distracted. Even though the same sound has happened, but now you are not distracted. Now you understand, okay, I have a fairly developed mindfulness. So likewise, we can use this as a kind of life tests coming on our way to test ourselves, to check whether we are capable of withstanding it, capable of handling it. So we can take in that sense to further development. So in that way, we can take or use these difficulties as a blessing to ourselves. Yeah.
We just received one last question, Bhante, regarding the Dhamma talk.
Okay.
Yeah. Can I read?
Sure.
Dear Venerable Bhante, did you mean to have animitta as a practice to avoid creating conceit? My question is, when conceit is happening, how to prevent with metta?
No, actually, when you are more and more keeping your mind empty and without much of the signs and your mind is fairly pure, fairly clean, so then the operation of the conceit can be easily recognized. Now suppose you haven't developed any mindfulness, you haven't developed any concentration, you haven't developed any wisdom. In that sense, conceit is another mind state that you are getting entangled with, and you are simply become a victim of it, and you are operating by that, but driven by that. But on the other hand, more and more you are having a fair amount of wisdom and maintaining the clarity of mind, maintaining the purity of mind, and your interest is to maintain that purity of mind. And at that moment, suppose now there is a kind of a conceit arise. Now you can properly recognize it. Because you have lost the balance, you have lost the simplicity available in the mind. Rather, you are now trying to manifest as a person. Now, a person has come forward. This we need to recognize. So, when we recognize, okay, now I-making is happening. Now, a person is coming forward. I am now promoting a personality. So, it's a matter of abandoning it, not promoting it, properly understanding it, dismantling it. So that is where we have to slowly abandon conceit. Okay.
That's the end of all the questions, Pant.
Okay. And then actually I like to give the guidance for the guided sitting session, and I like to leave the session and allow Chamila and all of you to continue the session, Mindfulness for Young Adults, till maybe 4 p.m. Sri Lanka time. But I am actually leaving after giving the instructions. So to continue the guided sitting, may you sit in a comfortable position.
Avasarai Bante?
Yeah.
Just would like to make an announcement today.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Please go ahead.
So I just want to let everyone know that we have completed 99 sessions of Mindfulness for Young Adults session so far, so over 2 years. And so next week it will be our 100th program, and we will have a special program for it. So we will send you more details regarding the time and the program agenda and things like that later in the week. So if you are not already in the email list of Mindfulness for Young Adults, drop us a email, or you can put your email in the chat window, and we will add you to the list, and so that we can send the details across to you for the special program happening next week. That will be 29th of May. Bante, would like to add something to it?
Yeah, actually, I thought of preparing a little presentation based on certain books, or maybe one book, and to direct you on to certain interesting reading, and to have some motivation in the practice. And it may not be the typical session maybe, but something more instructional, more into the discussion, and based on what we are going to present. And it may be a little bit of change to the typical our mindfulness session just for next week. So that we have something different, something interesting. So that's what I like to share with you.